the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
And back for more Bucket Strategy. Is that the title? What are we? Bucket Strategy Investing? I believe we are. Johnny Dean here with Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. If you're watching on television, you're seeing the sign audio only today. All right, so this happens every once in a while. We just got to make sure all the technical stuff has worked out. But in the meantime, you've got us radio, television, audio, and all across the internet as well. Big topics today, a couple of things. It's going to be hard for me to determine exactly which way we want to go because there's so much to talk about. What we're going to get into here in a little bit has to do with pension and pension options. And should you take the lump sum? Should you take the annuity option? In many cases, you've got a choice. Whether to take a lump sum out of your pension, if you're lucky enough to have a pension, and while by the way, pensions with private companies, private pensions have been going by the wayside pretty much over the last 40, 50 years. They still exist, and they still, of course, exist in the government sector jobs and certain nonprofit type jobs, teachers and all that stuff. So, at private schools and all that. So anyway, people do have this option. And they want to know, do I take what's being offered to me if a lump sum is offered to me, or do I take the monthly or whatever it is stream of payments? And, you know, this is a big decision for many people. And oftentimes it comes down to your own investing prowess, acumen, abilities. And there are a few other things you need to consider with that as well. So we got that on the agenda. That's going to be coming up here in a little bit. I still want to finish some of these retirement terms made simple. also, a couple of things here. And we won't have time to get to both of them because both of them are a little bit longer discussions than what we probably have time for, you know, in the short amount of time that we have. One of them, which I think we'll get to next hour, has to do with an article a couple of years ago that was written by Jonathan Clements, I think in Market Watch, and he came out with 13 financial tips to live by. Now, some of these are sort of tongue-in-cheek, although I believe he's actually serious about some of them. Certain things that you probably... Well, Professor Plum, I'm going to run some of these by you. I don't agree with all of these. I'm not sure that he gives the entire story on some of the stuff he says you should never do. See, and here's the problem.
We love the word never and always because it gives us something to cap on.
It really does. And that's sort of what we're going to be doing here.
We always cap on people that use the word never.
Yeah. Well, it's true. It's absolutely true. I can think of very few things in the financial world where we would say never do this or always do that. I've said always pay your taxes on time or pay your taxes. It's better if you pay them on time. But if you don't pay them at all, bad things are going to happen. So I would say always pay your taxes. Can you think of a counter-argument to that?
I'm trying to think of never. Never go deep into debt. Never spend money.
Never gamble with your retirement savings, your life savings.
But I'm sure that there are times when you could come up with an outrageous, realistic example.
Never take your entire life savings and bet it all in Las Vegas over a weekend. I mean, we could get ridiculous with this, but...
Well, maybe I've saved up $100,000, and my uncle is on his deathbed. I'm his only heir, and he's worth $20 million. Yeah. I can go to Vegas and blow that 100 grand because I know I'm getting 20 million or whatever the number.
Well, you better check, triple check to make sure that
as
nothing
long as
has
I
been
know.
Changed.
As long as I know, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, oops.
Yeah. Oh, that's not my name. So I would still say never do that.
Not until you actually have the money in hand.
But then it's not your life savings.
Then your life savings is...
Right. So don't gamble all that away. I'll turn this around and say never cheat on your taxes. How's that? All right? I would say never cheat on your taxes. That's not a good thing. People do it all the time. But, you know, the official stance is never cheat on your taxes. All right. So always and never. This is the problem with some of these articles that are written. When they tell you it's a huge mistake to do this, which means... They're saying never do this or never do that. All right, enough on that. But here's the other thing, too. Probably won't have time to get to it today because our topic tomorrow actually deals with this. You know, we've talked about sequence of returns risk before, Professor Plum.
That's the primary motivating driving factor behind making sure you have a proper bucket strategy.
Correct. And we can explain it in quick terms, which is that if you retire at a time when the markets are down, unfavorable, when equities are down, and you are taking money out of that same portfolio that is volatile, that is to say going up and down and probably going down more than up, those first few years in retirement, if you happen to have some bad years in your portfolio and you're taking your money out of it, it can devastate your portfolio. And I mean to the point where you'd run out of money if you don't make some serious changes. Nobody wants to have to make changes midstream. So that's what's called sequence of returns risk. Now, on the other hand, if you have some good years early on, well, heck, I mean, you can wind up with more money than you thought, than you'd calculated, which is a good thing. But it's still a risk. It's still a risk. You don't want to gamble. So that's why we develop buckets, and that's why we talk about buckets, because that tends to mitigate, if not completely take away, the risk of the sequence of returns risk. Nothing can really take it completely away, but it's a darn good start. All right, so, but that's if you're retired. Did you know that there is a sequence of returns risk for savers?
True.
Not retirees.
Well, we've talked about that in the past, too. Not quite in the same context as sequence of returns, but other than, you know, somebody who's 25, 30, 35 years old, just starting to save and build their portfolio, has a completely different desire for the market as somebody who is, you know, 65, 70, who is either getting ready to or retired.
Isn't that strange?
You know, what is somebody who, you know, is getting ready to retire? They don't want to see the market fall. What is somebody who's starting out? Well, they probably don't understand that they do want the market to fall.
Right when they're putting their money in the 401k.
And stay down for the next 10 years.
Maybe not 10.
Okay, 20. And well, then all of a sudden recover crazy. So you get an average from day point A to point B.
If it stays down for 10 years, it's probably not going to be
a problem.
No, it's going to be a problem. But yes, that's exactly right. A saver, you know, this is why we separate the two halves of our financial lives, one to the accumulation side and one to the distribution side. And the reason we do that is because both sides have two, in many cases, completely opposite goals.
Well, in one side, where we're taking money out of the portfolio, we are trying to protect against bad news.
Yes.
On the side where we are putting money in, we want to see the market go down a little bit so we can buy things on sale.
Right.
Opposites.
People don't look at it that way, unfortunately. So here's the thing. If you have some bad early years in your savings life,
is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Is that the good thing?
Is it always good or never good?
Well, that's just it. All right. This is exciting stuff, and doggone it, we probably won't be able to even get to it today. I don't think.
Oh, that's a heck of a tease.
Well, it is, but I love the topic because it's not something, well, it's something that we talk about. We don't refer to it directly, but as I was looking through one of these Michael Kitsis articles, Michael does some really, really good research. And he actually came up with some of the numbers.
Michael, you guys are on first name basis, huh?
Mike. I call him Mike.
Yeah.
Good buddy. Yeah, right. No, but he comes up with some good, but he also has the research brain, the analytical brain to go do the research and back it up. So while we may not get to it today, it's a wonderful topic. And it speaks directly to why you need a strategy, not just in retirement, but you need one
to start getting ready for retirement.
Right. And you say, well, what kind of a strategy does a 25-year-old need? I mean, honestly, I got
save early, save often.
Well, that's a strategy. I've got 40 years to retirement or whatever it is. You know, what kind of a strategy does somebody need? Just put the pedal to the metal and the thing to the floor. And and just go for the growth, right? Well, yeah, that's the strategy. Yes, that is. That's probably a decent strategy for a 25-year-old. But what gets in the way? Human emotion. What gets in the way? Shorter-term goals.
Well, yeah, and the ability or the inability to save early and save often.
That's right. That's right. So
that new truck, that new car, that new this, that new that. I mean,
well, yeah, discretionary spending and then mandatory spending. Buy a house, you know, families. Maybe, you know, you get married, have some kids along the way, and then all of a sudden you have a need for life insurance that you didn't need before.
All of a sudden that discretionary cash you had before is gone.
It's gone. You think, well, maybe it's not gone. I'll just make more money, but you got more to save. You know, college education, not even college. Some people have to save for, you know, private school education. Anyway, all right.
I don't know if you can save for private. It just becomes part of the budget.
Well, in many cases, that's absolutely
for
true.
Elementary,
although you may have 3, 4, or 5 years if you're really on the ball before the kid starts.
Yeah, when they're born, you've got 4 or 5 years to save up for kindergarten, first, second, third grade.
I didn't.
By fourth grade, it's gone.
No, see, I didn't.
I didn't either. True. We didn't start saving until they started going to private school, and then
I was just trying to figure out how
to make ends meet.
I was trying to figure out how to be a parent to somebody. Number one, and number two, I got this extra mouth to feed. And then two, exactly, trying to make ends meet. So. All right, this is all kinds of stuff. 877-PLANNER, I should give you our phone numbers, 877-752-6637. Also, as I said, pensions and all that stuff, just a lot to talk about today. Anything that's on your mind, you give us a call. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. Bucket Strategy Investing continues.
Listen on the go. Download the Biz Talk Radio app, available in iOS, Android, and BlackBerry. Biz Talk Radio.
Exploring options for investments that can be integrated into a fundamental strategy to manage your wealth. Now on Bucket Strategy Investing.
Now and next hour and every day through the end of the year, certainly. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum here from Lucia Capital Group. Bucket Strategy Investing. Again, we're audio only today, so if you're used to watching us on television, you probably already figured that out, but you can still call the program. We are live again, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Emails go to our website, wealthed.com. I should remind you, too, that if you want to talk off the air about this stuff, all this important stuff that we're going to get into here shortly, including your pension options, which we'll talk about at the bottom of the hour, give them a call at Lucia Capital Group because they do this every day. For whatever reason, they're excited to do it every day. 800-644-1150, the off-air number at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. You can ask your questions. You can get your questions answered. You can get your strategy put together. In fact, the whole team works under one roof, which is a really convenient thing to have. It's not just the planning side. You've also got the investment side of the house, two different parts of the house all together. So the nice part about that is you can meet with an advisor about your strategy and talk about the ways to build your strategy, build your portfolio, and work with the goals that you have, and then talk to the people who are going to put that strategy into implementation. The Equity Bucket 3 strategy specifically, but there's others too. 800-644-1150. Give them a call there at Lucia Capital Group. Been doing this for many, many, many years, decades now. Let's see. Oh, I told before we get to the pension discussion, I told the Perry in Long Beach, California, I thought we were going to get to his email. He had a Social Security question. I thought we were going to get to it yesterday. We did not. So Perry's question goes like this. I hope you're listening. My wife and I are both 60. My benefit at full retirement age will be more than twice hers. We're considering having me wait until age 70 to claim, then having her claim somewhat earlier. The problem is figuring out when. There's one wrinkle. She works as a part-time community college instructor, earning about $30,000 per year, but in California, those earnings are outside of the Social Security system. In other words, they don't pay FICA. But she is almost certain to receive no actual pension from the teacher's retirement system. She's also likely to keep working after 62, age 62, in this role. So now, Perry has two questions here. Two questions for the optimal strategy would seem to be, one, would she suffer a benefits penalty due to her earnings if she claims at 62? And two, if she claims early, does that reduce permanently her spousal and possibly survivor benefits to be received past age 70?
Well, let's take the second question first. If she claims early, does that reduce permanently her spousal and possibly survivor benefits that she would receive at some point in the future? The answer is yes and no.
One out of two.
It will permanently reduce her spousal retirement benefit if she applies for her own benefit early. It will not reduce the survivor benefit if she applies for a spousal retirement benefit early, or her own retirement benefit early. So there's two sides of that. Now, I have not gotten a clear answer, but I do believe this is the way it works, that her earnings will still affect, even though she's not paying FICA taxes, it will affect her ability to ultimately, well, it's counted because it's going to go into the Medicare wages, and the Medicare wages are going to count towards their earned income test. They're going to say she's earning $30,000. That's $13,000 over the limit, or give or take. So she's going to lose $6,500 of benefits, which sounds like you're going to lose a big chunk of them at that point.
Prior to full retirement.
Prior to full retirement age. It's 62 doesn't matter at this point other than collecting a retirement benefit. So it's all the way up to full retirement age that she has to worry about this work. I don't know where you're, what's happening and why you're saying she's not going to receive a pension from this work. Because if she's not paying into FICA, the reason that they are allowed to be exempt is because they provided for pensions from other sources. This is the reason that they don't have FICA. So,
well, she works part-time, so maybe there's...
Maybe she's not going to earn enough credits, not enough, you know, 5 years.
That's the only thing I could think of.
But she's been doing this for a while, and she's going to do it for a while longer.
Does it say how long she's been doing this?
Does not say how long. She's been part-time community college, so...
She is now. So, but obviously, if she has a benefit... She's worked outside the system. She's done it for at least 10 years.
But I do believe they'll look at that those earnings even if it's not paying FICA. Now,
I would say yes.
How many years of earnings does she have outside of the community college? I don't know. Will she have a WEP, a windfall elimination provision? I don't know. Will she? We don't have enough information for that. But I do know the second answer is taking a retirement benefit early will affect the spousal benefit if she applies for it later. Taking a retirement benefit early does not affect the survivor benefit. The only thing that affects the survivor benefit is the age at when you apply for the survivor benefit.
Well, yes, and his idea, Perry's
past
idea,
age 70.
Was to take it at age 70, take his, thus potentially maximizing any survivor benefit should he go before she does.
And his is twice what hers is. So
it makes sense
for his.
Right.
And they're both 60, which means they were born after 1953, after January 1st, 1954, which means they don't have the option of taking a spousal benefit without taking their own, even after they get to full retirement age.
No. And since they're both the same age, he'll be 70. If he waits until age 70, she couldn't even collect a spousal...
Until that time.
A spousal benefit until such time. So he would... have to apply for his, or she would have to apply for hers.
So if she's going to keep working, it's probably going to make sense for her to wait to take her benefit until full retirement age, and then
simply because it will
it's
likely
going to be a big chunk coming off.
$30,000, and
she's going to lose $6,000 or $7,000 of her benefit.
Right, and if that's per year.
Per year,
and if she's not getting.
Maybe she's getting $12,000, $15,000 a year. You know, that's a big chunk.
It is. Now, if you still want to do it and you're still going to collect something, that's one thing. But here's how it works. In fact, we'll give you the 2019 numbers.
You remember the 2019 number?
It was $17,600. It's $17,640.
Very good.
Is how much you can earn. I had to think for a second.
Yeah, $150 a month.
That's right. $17,640 is the amount that you can earn and not have Social Security withhold any of your benefits. Anything beyond that, for every $2 that you earn...
Over the threshold.
You got to give back or they'll withhold. You'll probably have to pay it back because they're not going to know you're working until maybe a year or two later.
Well, in the application for a benefit, it says, do you plan on continuing working? And if you actually say yes...
Oh,
then they'll.
Will they ask you?
I think they ask you. But a lot of people, they retire at 60, 61, 62, and they say, I'm not going to work anymore.
And then they go
and then
back.
They go back to work later and find out a year or two later that they are going to have to pay them back what they inadvertently received that they were ineligible to receive.
Yeah, now even if she gets, a few $100 a month or whatever it is, a couple hundred, maybe not even that.
It might help.
It might help. And here's the thing. The money that's lost that they withhold is just put back into the system.
It's as if she never received it. And
yeah.
So when she does become eligible, either at full retirement age or when she actually does stop working, that portion of the benefit that was not paid or that was paid back won't be reduced as much.
No.
Might not be reduced at all if you waits long enough.
No. So they'll keep it for you. And then, as I said, once you hit full retirement age or you decide to stop working, then at that point, the earnings test doesn't matter. Other things could affect it. We don't know about, as we said, the windfall elimination provision or any of that. But assuming that's not affected, she may get a higher benefit. All right, 877-PLANNER. Talk pensions and anything else that's on your mind when we come back. Bucket Strategy Investing.
Listen on the go. Download the Biz Talk Radio app. Available on iOS, Android, and BlackBerry. Biz Talk Radio.
Okay. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. I played a gig on Saturday. We played this song.
Very good.
I thought it was good because the nice thing is if you have a nice responsive audience, you can take some of those songs if you're playing them up on stage and you can extend them for like 9 minutes. Just have the guitarist, you know, have different guitarists play different solos. I, as the piano guy, the keyboard guy, I can do a little, you know, 30-second, 1-minute solo. It's great. It's great.
Just keep it going.
I don't know how you do that on songs these days. These days, kids, they don't know from rock and roll. Anyway, so yeah, had played that one. It was nice, nice. Good band, good gig. Footloose, the name of the band. All right, so Johnny Dean here, Professor Rick Plum. Now, we're going to shift gears a little bit because we do have other topics to cover, and one of them has to do with pensions versus lump sum. Now, this is a question that comes up quite a bit. You know, I talked before and said that if you have questions off the air, you can call Professor Plum at that 800-644-1150 number. A lot of people do that. They come in and they meet. And one of the things that you wind up seeing Professor Plum and why we talk about it has to do with this very topic of pensions versus, you know, lump sum versus the annuity.
Yeah, for people that still have those pensions, some of them will, when they retire, have the option of taking, well, there's going to be multiple options of how to take that pension. Do you take it based on your life only? Do you want to provide something for a survivor, either through a term certain where that if you died too soon, somebody would continue to receive the payments for a series of years? Or do you need to provide something for your spouse? A lot goes into the decision for determining whether or not you take the lump sum or the monthly payments. I had this question come up last week. Somebody was looking at retiring. They're retiring actually kind of early, 59, spouse is 55. And they have a pension, nice mm-hmm. pension.
Yeah.
And so they have to now decide, okay, first, the biggest decision, do I do a life only? If you're married, do you do a life only or do you choose some form of continuing benefit to the surviving spouse? And that can be a difficult decision. And so it's a matter of how much, if something happened to this individual, this
the
person
one who,
that's
the
retiring,
owner of
the pensioner.
The one who owns the pension.
How much of an income does the surviving of that income does the surviving spouse have to have? Now, if they've got $10 million sitting in, you know, investment accounts already, and the spouse is not very healthy and the pensioner is very healthy, maybe they'll opt to take the life only and know that even if the odds go against them,
there's still plenty of money.
The surviving spouse will be fine.
Yeah.
Frankly, most people aren't in that camp.
No.
In this case, they both look to be pretty healthy. I mean, they're still only 59, 60, 58, 59 years old. She's a year younger than he is. Mm-hmm. They're expecting her to outlive him by some, maybe not 30, 40 years. But, I mean, it could happen if a proverbial Mack truck came around. So
but she's
how
expected
do we go
to
about
outlive.
Doing this? Now, they do have other monies, but one of the things, and the reason we look at which pension option would be the most likely one to take, because now we have something to compare against the lump sum. Because the reality is if you say, well, let's compare the life-only option, but if that's not a real option because you couldn't have taken that one because of the surviving spouse, don't even bother comparing that one to it. In this case, they decided that she would need the full pension, 100% joint and survivor option. So we can now look at the option that said, okay, if they take a joint and survivor, meaning that as long as either one of them alive, they will receive a monthly benefit. What is that monthly benefit? In this particular pensions case, it was like just shy of $5,600 a month.
Not a bad pension. That will live
as long as either he or she is alive.
So whoever dies, it will not affect. That will not go down.
It doesn't change. It doesn't go up when one of them dies either.
Well, no.
That's what it is. Now, just from we'll look into this from another point of view in a little bit. The life only option was $6,500 a month. So there's a $900 a month difference.
So if I take it, if it were me and my wife, if I took it and it would only survive, it would only live as long as I do.
Right. So if you get killed the week after you took the irrevocable election, it's done.
It's $6,500 a month for my life only. If I want it to continue for both my spouse and me, it's $5,600.
Just shy of $5,600 a month.
So there's a $900 a month difference. I have to take $900 a month.
Just pack that away in your little noggin, and we'll come back to that in a little bit.
That's why I want to make sure we have that.
Okay. But we're going to compare the $5,600 a month to the lump sum. And the idea is, if we take the lump sum based on certain reasonable assumptions, how long can that lump sum reasonably make a continuation of payments of $5,600 a month and not run dry? Because the problem with the lump sum is, when it runs dry, well, the monthly payments stop too.
Yeah, and that often comes down to investing abilities.
And it does come, and that's the next set. How comfortable is the individual handling a portfolio? The lump sum of this is about $1.2 million, just shy of $1.2 million.
Seems like a lot of money when you get it.
It does seem like a lot of money. How comfortable is the person who's going to be receiving this money or this check with managing or having help managing $1.2 million and a payout situation to be able to provide $5,600 a month? Now, that is about a 5.7% distribution rate out of the $1.18 million.
5.7%.
Now, people will say, well, that's a lot more than the 4%. That's because we're not using the 4% as a rule. Remember, the 4%, quote-unquote rule was 4% of the original value, and have it last for 30 years, but also increase the payments with inflation over time.
This is not,
this pension is a private pension. There is no cost of living. It's a flat number for as long as they live.
You're doing it that way because you have to compare, as they say, apples to apples.
We're trying to compare apples to apples. Yeah. And so if you could earn, and this comes back to your investment, what do you think if you had a portfolio on an average, do you think you could earn 3, 4, 5%, somewhere in there? Just at a 4% discount, meaning the overall portfolio could earn 4% going forward overall. A little bit of growth, a little bit of safety, a little bit of everything, balance, whatever you want to call
over
it.
Over the next...
Forever. How long is forever? How long will this lump sum last? And that gives us a break-even age. And in this case, the forever lasts until they're about 90 years old.
So they could earn 4%.
If they can earn 4% on the lump sum, they have they can make that payment, that $5,600.
Every year.
Every month.
No, every year, 4%.
Yeah, 4% every year going forward. They could have that $5,600 payment last until they were 88 and 89.
Now you got to get 4%. You got to get 4%.
So if you are comfortable with 4%, then you say, okay, at 3%, that lump sum would last until 84, 85.
Age 84.
So how healthy are you? These are all discussion points. Which one do you do? Now, for somebody who's looking at an 88, 89 time horizon, many times they're going to say, I'll take the lump sum. The lump sum does offer flexibility. You can spend a little more early, so you can take it at different times. Maybe it gives you the ability to wait until 70 to take your Social Security by taking more of the lump sum and then taking a lot less of it going forward after age 70. So it gives you some flexibility. On the other hand, the lump sum gives you responsibility. You have to be able to make that last. Some people aren't comfortable with that, and so they want to have that monthly check. A lot of that also has to do with what other assets they do or do not have. Do they have any other pensions? And the size of this pension. A lot of times people will look at this and say, well, this is my baseline. I'm going to take that plus my Social Security. And I've got other monies to give me flexibility. I've got another $1.5 million in my 401ks. I've got plenty of flexibility with that. But this gives me some very solid issues. Even though it may not be the greatest rate of return, I'm comfortable with this. I want the monthly check. But they have other assets for that flexibility. Other people look at it and say, I haven't really done a great job of savings. I want some extra flexibility and, to be able to do things. So the lump sum, and 90 is still pretty out there. Nobody in my family has made it to 90. Nobody in my wife's family has made it to 90. It's talking hypothetically. So the lump sum may make more sense for that particular issue. The smaller the pension is, a lot of times we see people where one has a pension, the other has a pension. One is $5,000 a month, the other is $300 a month. Well, they take the lump sum on the $300 a month and they lock in the $500 or $5,000 or vice versa, depending upon what they're trying to accomplish. But we need to find out what the break-even age is, what the required you know, discount, you know, what do you have to actually earn? Uh-huh. And now we can have a real discussion on which way to go. And so given this one, the people are leaning, that we spoke to last week, are leaning towards the lump sum, the way they've got everything structured in their life. They're comfortable. They're good doing investing. They do not have a lot of fixed expenses. They've got things going pretty well. And they even have some other money on top of this, so this isn't their only money. And their Social Securities, when they actually take them, are going to be fairly nice. I mean, to earn this kind of a pension, you had to be over the wage base probably for quite a bit of it.
Now, 4% over 30 years, I would think you could do that.
You would think, but it's
fairly.
It's not guaranteed.
Oh, the pension, it's certainly not guaranteed.
For the most part, is guaranteed. This one is a little bit over the PBGC limit, so they did that did come into play. That was a discussion.
A little bit.
You know, do we trust it? From all, you know, fundamentals, it looks like that pension, because it's private, has been funded appropriately.
Yeah, but there still is that to consider. Yeah. If you had a $120,000 pension per
right.
year.
This one's over it, and, you know, especially as early as it is.
Yeah.
They could lose some of this pension if the world comes to, you know, heck in a handbasket. But so this is all comes down to choice.
It
now,
does.
Do you have any other choices to make when it comes to this? Well, you have that $900 a month bogey between a life only and a joint survivor that you could maybe deal with at this point.
And we're going to talk about that. Maximizing, potentially, your pension. All right. Good stuff. This is how it works with planners. This is how it works. 877-PLANNER. Coming right back with more. Don't go away.
Listen on the go. Download the Biz Talk Radio app. Available in iOS, Android, and BlackBerry. Biz Talk Radio.
This is the show focused on integrating your investments with a strategy that's consistent and committed to helping you manage your wealth. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Yeah, we've got another hour coming up. Next hour, we're going to be talking about some financial tips to live by, according to Jonathan Clements over at MarketWatch, an article that's a few years old now, but it's still an interesting read. And I may have brought this up once or twice over the years, but it's always good to go over this and talk about what other advice people have for folks who just happen to be, you know, looking for financial advice online. And I should caution you, nothing wrong with financial advice online. Go look at it, but be careful that the advice that's given is usually intended generically, and you're taking a chance, I think, if you build your financial world around generic advice. You know, same thing with medical advice.
Yeah. Take a couple aspirin; it'll always help.
Well, yeah, I mean that's it. You know, you go online, you're feeling symptoms. You go online, you say I got a headache. Well, that could be runs the gamut of anything.
Yeah, anyway. Self-diagnosing off the internet. That's a problem.
Well, that's just, don't do that. Don't do that. That's worse, I think, than the finances, because you at least maybe can intuitively know that you can't these days safely get 9% per year. But at the same time, be careful what you read. So we're going to go over this financial tips that he wrote up. I don't know that he was serious about all of them. Maybe he was, but we'll say whether we agree with him or not. That's coming up next hour. Okay, so finishing up the discussion here on pensions versus lump sum. Professor, in the last segment, you went through very clearly and lucidly, I might say, the scenario that an advisor would do in trying to, you actually, this is a real life case you had with
yes.
just in the last week or so with a couple of clients who were trying to decide whether they take the pension or the lump sum. After going through all the various if-then scenarios and their goals and all that, you determined it was probably better for them to take this lump sum, which for them was about $1.2 million.
Right.
Now, their options left them, there were two options that they had on the, well, more than two. But for them, there were two options they were considering on the monthly payments. And that is, this is the husband's pension in this case, does he take a life only, meaning it only the pension only lasts as long as he does.
When he's gone, it's gone.
If he lives a month, it's gone in a month. If he lives a year, it's gone in a year. If he lives 30 years, it's gone in 30 years. So it depends on how long he lived. That amount was about $6,500, if I had that right. Call it $6,500. Now, that's just for him. If he wants to share it and make sure that his wife continues to get a pension, the same pension without a cut in pay.
Or some, now we can tailor it, but their choice was,
yeah, that's what I said. More than two, but these are the two that they were considering. He wants to, then instead of them receiving $6,500, they're going to get $5,600 a month. And the wife said she could make that work. $5,600 worked.
Yep.
So what they're in essence doing is giving up $900 a month
basically paying a premium of $900 a month to buy an insurance policy that insures her a payment if he dies before her.
That's all it is. That's what it comes out to be. Now, okay, I know where you're going with this, Professor Plum, but we only have 5 minutes here, so let's get to it.
What some people will look at doing and say, well, I'm basically paying $900 a month for this insurance policy, but I don't know how much this insurance policy will be. Because if I take that $5,600 a month, the lower payment that provides for my spouse, but she passes before me, the proverbial Mack truck finds her instead of me, I'm still stuck with that $900 discount for the rest of my life for an insurance policy that is paying nothing. So what some people will do is say, well, I'm going to take that $900 a month or some portion of it and buy an insurance policy.
In other words, take the higher amount,
take the life
zip
only,
$900 off the top, and buy
and see
an
how
actual
much
insurance policy.
Will it buy enough insurance to be able to provide for a cushion or enough to be able to deal? Now, out of pocket, I'm about the same right now. It was $900 one way, $900 the other way. We do have to account for some taxation in here. The issue comes down, if I die too soon, how much benefit will be there? Will there be enough to provide for her? And for how long? On the other side, if she dies too soon, it's definitely a benefit for me because I can just stop paying the premium. There may be a cash value or not, and I could, you know, but I can at least stop paying the premium if I got the extra $900 a month because I don't need the insurance anymore. Or they both die relatively close to each other, and the survivor hasn't had a chance to spend all of the death benefit yet. There's still something left over for the heirs, where when the pension stops, the pension stops. There's nothing left over for the heirs in this case. It takes somebody who's relatively healthy to do this. Now, they've got $10,000, a little over $10,000 a year to pay a premium with. Just 2 weeks ago, I ran into somebody that their advisor did this with them. They are now 85 years old, 83 years old. They're soon to be 85.
Both?
Yeah. They're both still alive, doing very well, except for they have the life-only option, and the advisor sold them a term policy for 20 years.
Oh.
In 2 years, that term policy will become too expensive for this client, for this individual to continue the policy. And they're both still alive. He goes, so term? I either need to die in the next 2 years, I said, yeah, you either, or live a really, really long time. And he goes, I can't guarantee either one of those options. One of them I don't want to guarantee, and the other one I can't guarantee. Because getting new insurance at this point, he's relatively healthy, but he's 85 years old. He's going to try to buy a new policy at this point, it's going to be it won't be as expensive as continuing his existing policy.
But it'll be up.
But
there.
It's too expensive too,
and won't make financial sense.
So we're looking at other ways, other options, alternatives, and things to build. So what I'm getting at here is that policy that we're looking to purchase for what they call pension max, for the replacement policy, should not be a term policy. It should be a permanent policy. Now, it can be one of these guaranteed universal life contracts where it doesn't have much cash value, if any, but it's guaranteed to last until age 100 or some number that you've decided on that seems significantly long enough to live well past you. But you don't want a term policy because there's a chance that you outlive the term. Now, he could continue that term policy, but his payments of X amount of dollars goes up by 20 or 30 times.
Unless he's
and he doesn't have the extra money to do that.
And unless death is imminent,
and paying that premium would kill him. Okay, well, I guess that solves it.
Well, you're laughing. You're being funny. But
not very.
Not really. It's a great idea. I don't know if you can say one way or the other whether, buying an insurance policy is worth it more often than not.
It's all about health, age, and resources and incomes and other factors involved.
But it's something to consider. Well, this is good stuff. I hope you're all taking notes. If not, or if you need some more information on this, you may give Professor Plum a call off the air at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. Your individual situation, your goals, they matter. Coming back with another hour, Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. The information presented in this material was gathered from sources believed to be reliable. However, its accuracy cannot be guaranteed. No client or prospective client should assume that the information contained herein or any component thereof serves as the receipt of or a substitute for personalized advice from Lucia Capital Group, its investment advisor representatives, affiliates, or any other investment professional. Rick Plum is a registered representative of and offers securities through Lucia Securities LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Lucia Capital Group, a registered investment advisor and an affiliate of Lucia Securities LLC. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training. John Dean is an associated person of Lucia Securities LLC.